Seen a lot of change, been through a lot of pain. Some things are not the same as they were a year ago. But all will be okay, I move on each and every day. The past is where it stays, way back a year ago.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Wake and Make Podcast. I'm super stoked for today's guest. He's one of my favorite people. I say that about every guest, but I really mean it today. Somebody that's been a huge influence on me, not just in leathercraft, but photography, and just as a man. So without further ado, I would like to introduce my good friend, your good friend, Seth Robinson. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, of course.
It's pretty cool. I love seeing the growth of your platform here, switching to a podcast instead of Instagram. It's great.
Yeah, it's quite a bit different. Less stressful. I don't have to do it live and deal with, if there's an internet like problem, I can just edit it out and post. I don't have to worry about there being hundreds of people watching it at one time, then having to keep coming back to it. And I could record it any time, and I do. I stack up these episodes and then edit them and get them all forecasted, schedule them, and then get back to work on other things. So it's been real exciting. Can you tell everybody about your business, your background, what you do, and sure. We'll get right into it.
So like Dennis said, I'm Seth Robinson. I started leather crafting a couple years ago, just needed a creative outlet. Been a big athlete my whole life, kind of that went away playing sports. So I needed something to like create. I played in a band growing up, don't do that anymore. So I needed something to kind of release. Just, I have creativity and I needed something. So I was like, leathercraft. I bought a belt, wasn't super happy and figured I could make it better. Not really at first, but so I started a few years ago to kind of turn a little bit of more of a hobby, which I knew I wanted to sell. So I worked pretty hard at like making something that was at least sellable. And then I guess it's been a few years now and more sales, just mostly, I have a website mostly online. I've done a few shows, but it's tough with my three boys, which is the business name, Three Sons yeah. Leather. When I'm not working in the shop, I'm a full-time firefighter. So that, the schedule's kind of perfect for having a part-time business. A lot of firemen do, where I work 24 hours and then I'm off 48. So
that's rad. Pretty nice. Yeah, that's so yeah. rad. You know, so many people that I've talked to that are into leather work say that they had purchased something and they thought, oh man, I can make this better. I wonder how many times people buy our products and they're yeah. like, oh, I could do this better. I'm like, dang, come on, man.
Yeah. I mean, so I think that most people could learn this skill or trade or craft, whatever you want to call it. But I do think it takes a certain person to stick with it and then just keep doing it, I guess.
Right.
I think anyone can like slap a few pieces of leather and call it a wallet and stitch it up. It may not be pretty, but I do think that like designing things, the way you tool your stuff, like I can't do that. I mean,
it would take you 20 yeah. years of art experience yeah, and not yeah. even just the experience, but the passion to stick with it. Just like leathercraft, like you're not born with the talent. It's honed, you know?
Yeah. So I, for example, the belt I bought, the buckle was literally upside down.
Oh yeah.
Well,
that's a problem.
And the belt is what I charge for my standard belt. So mm-hmm. I feel like what I paid, it definitely deserved to have a properly installed buckle. So
what was your interaction with the maker of it? Was there even an interaction or was it like a big company?
No, it was a smaller maker, and obviously I'm not going to name this person.
No, of course.
And so they sent me a new belt, But even in that new belt, like the sizing was different. The I bought a couple other things from them in the past too, and other people did, and actually I've repaired those items. So I honestly, it's not like bashing them. I feel like they, for certain things, for what they cost, I think they're, it's fair. But I think that sometimes, especially leather goods, you pay for certain qualities, and certain leathers especially, like I don't know, there is obviously there's leather that's better than others out there, so
sure.
And if you get, then there's the ultra, like
there's a difference between a panel that you get off of Amazon and you know, a full-blown piece of shell Cordovan, you know what I mean? And those are the two extremes that you can think of, and then there's everything in between. When I first started, I didn't think that there was such a huge difference between, you know, the majority of the stuff I use is like, the base is always like natural veg tan because I am tooling and because I'm painting on it, and then it goes from there. And there is a massive difference. And now having the leather sponsor that I have, the leather company, I'm like, holy crap, this stuff is such a great all around product, and it just has elevated. Like it's like anything, right? If you're a tattoo artist, a hairstylist, a woodworker, when you start, you don't realize the difference in tools and materials, all of these things, and then it's a massive difference when you use something better.
Right. I think like starting out, I'll see, like I follow the Leathercraft page on like Reddit, and like, there's always the question, what tools should I buy? What, how do I start? Like, I think like I went to Tandy, I watched Stock and Barrel video. I literally bought what he said, some of it. And I was like, I mean, it was perfect for learning. It was perfect to get off, like kind of start it up. But I mean, there are tools like my edge beveler, like the Palo Santo, or that's how you say it, then like the Cinebrox punching, like all these different brands. There's obviously different brands of stitching irons and stuff, but those do matter eventually, I think. But not, you don't need to spend thousands off the bat. And I like, that's always the comment that like go buy what you think you need and play with it and mess with it. And then, right. And then I actually passed on my old tools. I gave, like, someone was like, hey, I need a set. And I just actually, I was like, paid for the shipping cost and I'll send them to you. You can just have them.
I love doing that. That's the best thing that we can. I have companies, and this isn't a brag, it's just the real life, is that I have companies that send me out a lot of stuff, and I'm really happy and content with the stuff that I have. I put it in a box, and I either think, man, there's going to come a day that I'm going to open up an actual like brick and mortar school. It's good to have. Or if there's enough duplicates, and I'll give you an example. So my buddy Josiah, we were on this podcast. We were just talking, and he was like, he's talking about his edge bevelers and how they're very like elementary, and he needs to sharpen all these things. I just asked him for his address, and I had a brand new set, a 0, 1, and 2, or 1, 2, and 3. And I'm like, I just sent them to him, and because of how stoked he was, I was more stoked than he was. Like, I have it. Why am I going to hoard it? Like, I already have what I use. Like, I'm to the point in my career that I'm completely content. The only thing that I would like to get is a nice sewing machine. And I'm still not there yet because I'm not pumping out enough products. And stitching next to my, like, tooling and painting of stuff, stitching is what I get notice for more than anything else. So,
well, I have a sewing machine, and it's like buying a car. I don't know. They all eventually drive, but like how they drive is different. This one, it's probably overkill for what I need. But I bought it to sew up like the fire department radio straps. But I've also found that like, I don't want to do that full time. Like that's not the only thing I want to make. And in the fire service, once word of mouth, like word up will spread like wildfire. Like, oh, you're making radio straps. Oh, I got a buddy. He's got a buddy. And it's like, that's all
pun intended, but, like wildfire.
Yeah, exactly. But, and there's a ton of makers actually, like if I'm really busy and I make them custom for guys like locally, but like I'll send them, there's a guy, Ridgeway Leatherworks. His radio straps are so good. They're my, my buddy bought one. He's a New Jersey firefighter and, or in New Jersey. And, like, I have no problem recommending different leather workers if like I can't handle like an order or they need something specific that like I don't want to learn or I can't do or something. Like, I mean,
that's, I think it's important. That's I don't know if skill set is the right word or phrase, but like knowing when to pass on a project to another maker is something that is super important. I get asked to do like gun holsters, gun whatever stuff relating to guns, and there's two reasons that I don't do it. One, I would need the person's gun to wet mold. I don't want anyone's gun in any circumstance. I don't want to touch your gun. Unless we're at a shooting range and I trust that you're not murdering people, then I'll touch it, right? But like, it's just not, that's not my thing. Or I would have to buy a blue gun specifically for the gun that you want to holster. And those things aren't cheap, and I'm not known for a holster. So I'll hand that off to somebody. Or people do the same thing to me. There's people that reach out that want to get a portrait. Prime example, somebody reached out to one of my friends because they wanted to get a guitar strap that had six of their favorite guitar players on it, portrait style. And they're like, hey, I don't do this, but my friend Dennis. And now that man that owned that is one of the best clients I've ever had in my entire life.
I think I saw you making that. That was pretty crazy.
The guitar strap, y'all. Thank you.
Yeah, I get that. I sometimes get it with like knife sheaths. And in order, it's similar to like a gun or a blue gun. Either I need to buy the knife or, because I'm not going to like wing a properly fit knife. I mean, it's not going to fit unless I have the knife. So, and I just, I have a buddy, Steve, he's in Canada, Paradrop Leather. I'm sure you've seen his stuff. He makes amazing. And like, anytime someone's like, hey, you make a knife shield? I'm like, his book, he's booked up, but like hit him up. His knife sheaths are awesome. And they look like, I have one. I actually sent him a knife. He's like, I'll make one for you. And it's like, to me, I would rather someone that specializes and makes such awesome stuff like that, I would rather just send it to them.
That's smart of you. Like that rather than, I think you're to a place similar to where I'm at in the sense that I've done a lot of like custom one-off projects that I don't want to do that anymore because the amount of time it takes to build a pattern, then go through proof of concept, right? Which is a long process, and then prototype it, try to use it as much as you can before you got to fulfill this order, see where the weak points are. Then fulfill the order for one thing. You just did four jobs that you charged for one job. And that's great for someone that's learning. Take every single one of those jobs that people are willing to pay you for and say yes to all of them. Somebody wants a backpack, make them a backpack the best that you can, because that's how you gain your chops. But you realize as soon as you're trying to make like actual money off of this and you start valuing your hour, like if you charge $100 a day to do something and it takes you 3 days, but you only get paid for that first day, you're only getting paid, you know, $8 an hour or something crazy. You know, it's crazy.
Well, I definitely have had to learn to say no. I don't really like saying no because I feel like I want to make something or help them out or whatever and then make some money. But I also have learned that like, I have projects in my mind and I've written down that like I have a roll top. I've made a wax canvas roll top bag. It's like leather. Now I want to make a leather one with that pattern. I don't have a lot of time because I try to fulfill orders. And it's like, if I add someone's custom project, that's going to suck up a ton of time. And I have a few other things I want to eventually make and prototype and then release eventually. And that's just not going to happen. Like, I'm trying to create like certain lines, like any business would have, like, here's your wallets, here's your belt, here's your bags, certain bags. Like, I've cut bags in the past, and try to like, and I'm honestly, my product kind of, well, was too deep. Like, it still sometimes feels like it's hard to, cause I do a lot by memory, and like, sometimes it's like, oh crap, I don't remember that. Like, yeah. I should have wrote that down.
I have to get out an old one. I did that so much at the beginning where I didn't keep patterns for things and I would have to reproduce it. Now, something that I've really come to find useful is once you get a pattern that you've worked out a few times, say you're using cardstock or a cereal box thing, and it ends up being something that you're like, okay, I'm gonna add this to my collection, my catalog, whatever it is. There's this plastic film that you can get on Amazon. It's similar to what you would use as like a tablecloth. Like, imagine your grandma putting a tablecloth on the table before Thanksgiving or something, or like, it's a thick like roll of plastic. If you trace your pattern onto that, then cut that out, that thing will last you the rest of your life for sure. And then you have it and it's easy to stow away. It's not acrylic, so it's not going to break. And you can make those for absolutely everything. Like, I don't have dies for everything that I make, like, especially the shells of my wallets. I'm not mass producing those. I make them as they come in. It takes me no time to trace that pattern out and make, you know, 5 straight cuts. That's not hard for me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I have some products I still make by, like, I made 3 wallets today that are all freehand cutting and cardstock, and I need to have the dies made up because it would be more accurate, time saving. I have the press right next to me. That's the expensive part. I mean, the dies aren't cheap, but if you're making enough and selling enough, it's worth it. And I don't use Illustrator. I need to learn. I think
you sound just like me. There's a lot of things that we know if we spent the time to learn, it would make our jobs so much faster.
Just even prototyping a pattern. I mean, it'd be so much quicker to mess with it on Illustrator, print it out, and then tweak it from there. Because I don't know. I haven't, like, other than bags, which to me the bags are easier because it's more just, it's bigger patterns. So it's not as fine, like, small area. I feel like those are easy. I just use a big piece of, letterboard or something. I don't know what I was using.
The thing with bags that I find, because they take so much actual material when you do cut them out, and if you make a mistake on something that big, it really hurts the pocketbook. Like, if you commit to that and you're using a huge, you know, we're talking about square feet of leather, and that messes up. And then not only that, when you try to sell a tote bag that somebody could go to Joann's and pay for $3 to get a canvas one, then you make one that serves the exact same purpose. It's really, I haven't had much of luck in doing that.
Yeah, I sell basically 2 styles of bags. And one of them is like a medium-sized crossbody. That one sells a lot more than the totes, because I feel like there's brands out there. There's a brand in Cleveland that's like a luxury higher end fount. They make leather women's. It's very like fashionable to carry one of those bags, at least in this area. But they're expensive. I mean, they probably are worth it. They're like $600-$700, and people are like, oh yeah, I bought a fount bag. And I'm like, well, I mean,
It's all about the marketing.
But yeah, they're really good. I think they did some fashion show type stuff. Like, they're really good at, like, I don't know. My pictures are like in my house and theirs are like photo shoots with models and stuff. It's like, I can't, I'm not, I don't have that.
Speaking of which, we're gonna take a really, really quick break. And then we're going to come back and we're gonna talk about everything that we kind of just softballed up. We're gonna talk about Instagram, how you handle your marketing, obviously your photography, because I'm equally as big of a fan of your photography as the work that you do. And then we'll just see where it goes. So does it sound good to you, Seth?
Sounds good.
All right, brother. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Welcome back, guys. We are here with Seth Robinson. Super stoked to have him. We're going to get into the stuff that we enjoy talking about, which is social media stuff. I know for you, you do a fantastic job in branding your social media, Instagram specifically. And I admire the way that you do your photography. It's incredible. You could take something so mundane, just taking a photo of, your clicker press, and you do it in such a way that it's done so well.
Thank you.
I love the way that you do it. Can you talk a little bit as far as your strategy or something that might be able to help the people that are listening to it, including myself?
Sure. All my photography is done on an iPhone. I don't have anything fancy. I have a couple lights that I'm still learning how to use, artificial light. Like down in my shop, there's really no artificial light. But all my product photography, Instagram, is done, I don't know, somewhere in my house upstairs where I have natural light coming in. And then I just use Lightroom Mobile. I have a few presets that I found online. I found one on YouTube, and then I like messed around with it for a while. So they're mine now. And I edit that way. And then I edit a little bit more on the phone itself. And then that's pretty much it. It's just, I feel like I've kind of found like my little, what I like in a photo. And, but when it comes to like Instagram, I pretty much only post on there. And then I use, it's obviously connected to Facebook, I'll like cross post it. I already spend enough time on social media that it's like, I think that's why we just created a TikTok. I don't even know the name because I've never made a video, but I'm like, I don't know. I like taking the pictures and I like the simplicity of just like seeing people's photos. Sometimes the reels, it's like, I honestly, they're making money off of it. They're keeping us invested. And there's a reason. I think you get sucked in. I mean, it's noticeable for me. I can't imagine when my kids are on there, because they're going to be like, that's all they do. But you can definitely tell that it keeps your attention longer, because you'll just keep scrolling the reels and stuff. But I have a hard time, like, because it takes a lot of time to do TikToks and reels and YouTube. And I think it would definitely help. It can help anyone. But it's a where you want to spend your time kind of thing.
Have you noticed a drop off in your engagement from when photos were the norm compared to them pushing video content? Because you're one of the people that I've noticed that still gets a lot of engagement based off of just photos alone, where I don't. The follower count that I have compared to the amount of engagement that I get on a photo compared to what the engagement that I get on a reel is 100% night and day difference.
Yeah. So obviously I've posted a few reels and those are getting higher engagement. But they also take me like 2 to 3 times as long. I'm not very good at them to try to like, I don't know. I am very selective in music. So then what I want to post on my page, I'm like really like, I don't want to just like make a, I don't know. I feel like a lot of these, the reels are like recycled sound bites or songs over and over and over. And a lot of the same type of content over and over and over. And I don't know, it's getting plays, so it works for people. But I kind of don't necessarily want to do that. But back to your question, my following is kind of continued to grow. I don't really post necessarily to gain followers. Obviously, though, a lot of my sales come through my photos and word of mouth through Instagram. Like, sales in parts of the world that I'm like, how in the world did you hear about a small business in Cleveland, Ohio? Like, it blows my mind still. But I don't know. I think if you go about social media as it was intended organically, I think it does still have the potential to grow your business and the people that want to see your stuff. Cause in the end, like, it's a small business and people want to see who you are and what you're making, not like just this mass produced everything. I don't know.
That's super key. Something that I've kind of switched my approach with because of the communities that I'm, you know, the community in general that I'm involved in, you being part of that community. If I reach out to somebody and I'm like, hey man, how's your engagement with photos or how's this? And they're like, everything's down. I'm like, okay, well, I guess people just don't hate me or whatever. Maybe they're just not seeing it. And I've really like, it's hard for me when I post something and it completely flops. Like, I'm a human being, right? Like, it bums me out. And I've just been training myself, like, post something and don't delete it. If it gets, you know, I have whatever, like, not that big of a following, but over 5,000 followers on Instagram, and I get, you know, 40, 50 likes on a photo. I'm like, that doesn't even make sense.
Yeah.
It bums me out. And then I'm like, maybe I should stop caring. And then I get sales on things that have hardly any engagement, because as long as it's going to the right people, like, I've worked past trying to impress my friends and family or even my peers so much. Like, I could do that through conversations like this. I'm solely trying to make sales off of, this is a business. Like, I'm not trying to fake the funk when it comes to that. That and another thing that's been huge is stories. I've been killing, like, I've just been doing good on stories where I, in the morning, whatever I'm working on, I'll snap a photo. And then an hour or 2 hours later, I'll show the progress of that. And actually building a story the way a story is supposed to be built, because even if somebody watches up to like clip 4 or 5, later in the afternoon when they have a few minutes, they're going to go back and watch the rest of like how it was built. And that's where I get the majority of my sales, is when people see how things are act, like the behind the scenes and the work that goes into it. It's nice to have those like really glossy, gorgeous photos to add to your catalog, which is what your Instagram is set up like a catalog.
Yeah, it is.
You know, really. all of ours should be, I suppose.
Yeah, but I don't want it to ever be like a, like when you're like a Christmas toy thing, like, oh, here's this page, there's this page. I try to throw in every once in a while, I like to throw in pictures of my shop. First of all, it's cool. I like it. I've made it it's got certain vibes to it that I just enjoy being down here personally. So I try to throw in like the personal type. Like, obviously I take pictures of the tools. I think leather crafting tools are awesome. They look cool. They're unique the way they look. And in certain makers, I want to show off their tools, their work. I mean, I think it's mutually beneficial. I think I don't know. And it shows people, like, when you see a wallet stitched, you don't necessarily know what goes into that. And I think it's good to show people again, like, this takes multiple steps to get to a certain point, and it's not just slapped together and done. I mean, it takes a long time to make things.
I have to say, Seth, those photos that you take of your shop are some of my favorite photos to see on your Instagram, and they're done so well. And something that's special, I think, between you and I, we were building our shops basically at the same time. And behind the scenes, you and I are just talking about everything. I knew kind of what was going on before you were kind of really showing it. And I think because of going through something similar at the same time and, you know, talking quite a bit during that time period, it created a bond between us. So when seeing you post photos, of your work area, I'm constantly like, it's really inspiring. And it's also very cool in the sense of like, man, I didn't even think about that. I could incorporate something like that here or there. And like, that's what it's inspiring. Well, and I love it. I love the way you do all of that.
Well, the space I'm in now is technically like my second shop, because I was in a small little room that I outgrew. And when I first set that one up, it was like random. I had tools hanging on the wall. It didn't matter. It was like, oh, I'll just put this here because there's space. And now the space I'm in, there's probably things I could do better, but it flows so much. It makes so much more sense. Like all my tools.
That's the key.
Yeah. They're like within.
That's the key, is having, being able to have like a flow state when you walk into your shop. And for me, I tell people when they come in here, I'm always like, yeah, I could work in here completely blindfolded. I know where everything is. And I'm sure you're exactly the same way, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I am very, a lot of people will be like, oh, your shop is so clean. And part of that is like, I am obsessed with putting it back when I'm done. Like each day I'll hang the tools up like they are on the wall behind me. I hang them up because I like to start fresh each time I come in here. It's like, it honestly just helps me like, I come in and it's a mess, I have a really hard time like just thinking. I don't know, my brain is like, oh, I don't really want to work right now, like it's like, I'll just look at this stuff, I don't know. so
relatable. I find I'm the same way. I like to have a really, really clean work area, like down to the point of like wiping down my window seals and like making sure everything is good. And I find when the days that I don't do that, I tend to be a little bit, I think saying depressed is a too strong of a word, but like just feel kind of like blah. And then I'm like, why am I feeling this way? And then I clean my shop and I'm like, okay, then I feel like, I feel more energetic and more excited to come in here. And like, I see people's shops and it's just completely cluttered, and every single tool that they have is on their workbench. And I'm like, that works for them, but for you and I, that does not
work. Oh no, I think everyone likes to some extent coming into a clean space, no matter what it is, a house. Like, I don't know, when our family goes on vacation, we clean our house before we go, because it's like, it's got to be clean when I come back. So it's just my dad was like a Navy diver, so we were raised early on with like really strict cleaning. We clean certain days. It was like, I mean, we grew up on a military base. Yeah, there was a lot of like organization, and that kind of carried over into my adult life and now into my business, which I think it helps maintain like just for like keeping track of your material and stuff. It helps.
Inventory, all of those things. Like, I'm the same way, man. I totally get that. But I really want to kind of explore a little bit more about your photography. If you can't tell, I'm a huge fan. I think that you do such a good job. How important do you think branding is in photography, especially in the world of Instagram?
So I think there are certain brands that are like instantly recognizable, especially like on a social media. Like you see the style of their photo, like Peter McKinnon, for example. I don't know if you've heard of him, big YouTube guy, big EDC world, that whole thing. Like his photos to me, like you see a picture and you're like, oh yeah. Or you see someone's photo and you're like, oh, they watched his video. But I've tried to create like at least my own, like, I'm not like super picky on like, does it match my feed? Like the picture doesn't have to like fall in line, but because I think I take similar locations, similar lighting, similar editing, they all kind of work. But I do think that it does matter. Like if you're trying to create an image for your brand, first of all, good photos matter a ton, because you can have an awesome product and take just a dumpy looking photo and people are going to, it just doesn't look right.
We see it all the time, and vice versa in the same way. You could take you could take a great photo of a light to moderate product and make it look really good. And I, dude, it bums me out when I see people that I know personally that are extremely talented, and they're taking photos that I know aren't glorifying their work at all. And it's frustrating because I love the community of Leathercraft so much, and specifically the people I've made friends with. And I think that doesn't have to start later, like later in life, in your career rather. Like, there's people that are really like hobbyists about this, and you can still take good photos. Like, I see so many people that they finish a project and then they put it on top of their like their cutting mat that's all stained and has glue everywhere and all of that stuff, and I'm like, my eyes are immediately drawn to the grid pattern that's on your cutting mat and the glue and the dye, and I'm not like focused on your product. And I don't get me wrong, I do that when I'm like creating stories, because the putting it together on the surface that I'm putting it together is part of the story.
Yeah, you're not going to build a scene of a half-made product and go shoot it. It would look
no weird. That's not the story format. And I mean, that brings a really good point though too, is like, know where you're putting the photo. Like, build the photo for that. And
right. Well, and even I don't even like, when I take my photos, most of the time it's on like certain tables in my house. I very rarely like am setting up like basically sets. It's very like organic to like my home, where I live. And like, if I would set my wallet there, and like, I try to, I don't know. I just try to do that consistently, but I agree with you. There are certain crafters that make amazing things, and then you can tell it's like they would benefit from, not to say they aren't probably selling stuff or whatever, but they would definitely benefit from watching a couple YouTube videos. Like, honestly, I watched that Peter McKinnon talk about product photography on an iPhone, and he's a professional photographer, and said, I mean, there's probably tons of differing opinions, but he said you can take great photos with iPhones. And I agree that, I don't know. I can mine be better, certainly, with a higher-end camera.
So could his, though.
Right.
So could his photos on a professional level. Everyone could, as a maker and as a creator, if you ever hit the peak of what it is that you're doing, pray to God that you don't, because you're gonna end up getting over it. Like, mission accomplished, game over. Like, you won. What are you gonna do?
There really is no perfection in any of this. I mean, it's perfectly imperfect. It's gonna be, I don't know. You can always get better at anything you do in life in general. But I don't know. This might be slightly off topic, but I was watching Justin Verlander. He's a pitcher in baseball, obviously. I watched him holding a baseball, and the way he was literally just rolling it on his fingers, practicing rotation, just rolling it. And I was like, that dude's won Cy Youngs, and he's just in his mind playing it over and just rolling a baseball to feel how the seams turn over. And I was like, to me, that was like, man, that's a dude that's like, he's pitched 10, 15 years, won Cy Youngs, been the best. And he's still literally doing something as little as just rolling a ball to see how the seams feel. And I'm like, well, that's how you get better. That's how you keep.
That's how you get better. And that's going to look different to everyone. For me, the way I feel I've gotten better in my craft is focusing on what I want to get better at. For the last year, I was really, really focused on the art side of my project. And I know that I had improved last year doing that, the tooling and the carving. And I said this out loud to a lot of people that are very close to me, like, this year I'm really focused on the construction of the work that I do, how pockets lay, like all of the things that get overlooked because the artwork is so eye-catching. Now I want to put the perfect package together. And a lot of my improvement comes from stepping away from my shop and being inspired by other things, or even like trying to clear my mind of everything else. And right before I go to bed, I start and finish an entire project that I'm going to be working on tomorrow. Like we were talking about before, like doing these sandal things, there's a lot of like construction, like layering of materials and where things need to be cut out and what's going to be glued in what order. And I go through it multiple times in my head at nighttime as I'm falling asleep. Like, okay, I'm going to walk into the shop. This is what leather I'm going to use. This is like all everything that you could think of, like doing the entire project without putting my hands on it. And that's where I've seen the greatest improvement, because I can make those mistakes in my head before I waste materials. And I do make a lot of mistakes in my head, and I can visualize, oh, that's not going to work. Like,
I've definitely, I'm a very like visual learner myself. Like I'm an avid golfer. I tend to like, I love watching even like the pros play, cause like then I can take it into like how I play, or like even the leather crafting, watching different like makers and techniques and stuff. And then basically I don't know. I see it in my mind. A lot of new, if I have a new design or something, I'm like, I can see how that will work. Or sometimes I fall asleep thinking about it. It's just like a,
speaking of new designs, how do you create new designs, and how are you able to keep them original by being inspired by other makers, but not ripping them off?
It's a good question. So
it's a good question because you're the one that came up with it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I don't think I have an answer. That's what's funny.
How do you do that? And just for the listeners, just to give you a little bit of behind the scenes. So I'm in contact with the co-hosts when they come on, before they come on the show, and I reach out to them. I want to be transparent for the people that are listening. And I ask them, because they are guest co-hosts, this isn't a Q&A with Seth. This is us just having a conversation. I go, hey, what do you feel like talking about? And then they give me some ideas, rather than being like, hey, so in third grade, I researched this about you. Like, this is supposed to just be friends talking. And that's how it is.
So when I asked you that question, it's something that like I constantly, because you are, if you're on social media, you follow different makers, it's like this bombardment of designs that you're like, you don't want to directly copy it. But like, I have this idea right now in my head of just like a flap, like coming over, tucking in, but there's tons of different brands that I could literally name that have flaws similar. And I'm like, how do I make it that it's original to me? Even my wrap, my Mitchell wallet, it's a wrap stitched in a corner. There's a lot of makers that have that similar design. And it's like, I don't know. I'm very confident in like the stuff I've made that it's like, it's me. I've taken the time, I've put in, the ideas that I have into it. It's my own dimensions, everything like that. So I'm very comfortable in that, but it's challenging because like in a wallet, there's only so many ways to make a bifold, a bag. You can only
reinvent the wheel so right. many different ways. Right. Right. And that's the problem that we face every single time in every single thing that we do. And it's great to be inspired by other people. I think it's awesome. And like what you said, there's a lot of things that I make that are part of my catalog that are extremely similar to other people, but I've set a rule for myself that as long as I change whatever I'm doing at least 20%, then I have rights to that. You know, like Picasso said that good artists copy, or good artists copy, great artists steal. I live by that. Like, we're not doing anything original, but we're doing everything original. Like,
yeah, like for example, I'm sure you've seen it. Like, stitchless wallets are super popular right now. There's a lot of makers making them. I think the idea is pretty awesome, because when you've sewn a lot, you're like, oh, that's pretty sweet. I mean, but I also feel like at some point, there's only so many ways you can tuck that flap in. It's impossible not to be the same as somebody. Now the way the wallet's shaped and the the pockets are cut and everything to me is completely different. So,
and that's a super good point, because I knew that going into it, watching enough videos when I, before I even got into Leathercraft, that everything, a bifold wallet is a bifold wallet, a card wallet, whether you do it vertical or horizontal, is a, I mean, it, they serve the same function. So I knew right away, like, okay, how am I going to set myself apart that's going to be consistent? And I just added a right angle on, instead of just doing a standard bifold, I add a flap that has a right angle on it so that people can identify my work, even though a bifold is a bifold is a bifold. And I change things within the pockets and, you know, in putting hidden pockets in different places and how I put that all together. But that came in time. Like, if you're just getting into this, copy, steal, do everything. Like, if you like the way I'm doing something, contact me. I got you. Like, as long as you're doing something and you're happy, that's all that matters. I can't think of, I take that back. I definitely know makers that get bummed when their patterns get ripped off.
Yeah.
But that's also like,
yeah, I've seen,
you know,
there's definitely been some call outs on that I've seen. But
I think, but if somebody's brand new, like, if, listen, if you, and I know this isn't the case because we make completely different things, but if you or somebody that was my peer where we're equals totally ripped off one of my things and it looked like mine, I'd be like, yo, Seth, what's up, man? Like, but if it's someone that's like 2 months into Leathercraft and they're totally green and they just got their Amazon kit in the mail or their Tandy, you know, kit, beginner kit, and they sent me a photo of it and was like, hey, like, I really like, I, dude, I'd be so honored. It's just all context.
Right. Or it's like, I mean, I make a valet tray. Everyone makes a valet tray. And it's like, it's a square and it's buttoned in the corners, like, or riveted. It's not unique. It's now someone, but like, I do think that's where it went back to like social media and branding. If you like my story and the way my products look, then you're going to buy it from me. And that's, I don't know. And that's up to obviously the purchaser, but it's also up to the maker too, to like, okay, there's a lot of other brands, but like, who do you want to support as a, is like, make yourself supportable, I guess. I don't know.
You nailed it. You totally nailed it, because people can buy a bifold wallet at any department store. They can buy it from any large maker that can sell their products for much less than us. They can buy it from you. They could buy it from me. They can buy it from Josiah. They could buy it from 100 different people that are our mutual peers, but they picked you to buy it from because they're buying you, and not in a like inappropriate way. I'm just saying they're buying your story. They're buying your personality. They're buying your work ethic. They're buying the photo of your family that you post once a month on your business thing. That's what they're buying. The wallet serves a purpose, and that's it. It's it's a utility.
Yeah. Eventually everyone's wallets, all these makers' wallets and stuff, they all carry cards and cash in the end, and it doesn't matter. It's who do you like? And also, like, I mean, there's a lot of guys that like EDC guys that'll like post my wallet and they'll post another maker's wallet. They carry both. And like, it doesn't bother me at all. I love seeing people carrying my stuff. And I think it's cool to be in like a rotation. I don't know. I think it's cool to have people that like people, a guy that bought one of my natural veg tan wallets, he's sending me every once in a while some like updates of the, I love getting that stuff of the patina. And it's so cool to me to like people, like I just shipped a wallet to Singapore and I'm like, a guy wants to carry one of my wallets. And like, that's just cool. It's
that kind of stuff never gets old to me. When somebody, like you said, like when I've shipped stuff all over the place, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, a lot to Canada, all of those places. And it always is so shocking how small the world really is and how things just fall into place. Like what we were talking about before, you might post something and it gets you know, 30 likes, or even less. I'm just saying that's my personal experience, and my frustration comes because of my follower account and the photo not being sent to everyone, whatever. But one of those 30 people, if they walked into your brick and mortar shop that day, if 30 people walked into your store and put their eyes on your product, that's a massive success.
Right.
Massive success. So to look at things like that, it's huge. And that's why I think that the whole TikTok and Reels thing is so valuable right now, is because there's times that I get 200,000 views on something, and talk about mind blowing, where that's where the like flood of orders, it's a less of a community kind of feel. It's more of like a
commercial advertisement. On Super Bowl Sunday.
Exactly. That's the best way to put it. Like, it loses a little bit of its feel until I get it to the point where, before I get to the point where we're discussing things and we're talking on Zoom and figuring out what this person wants their wallet to be and all of those things. I'm very, very personable when it comes to that.
So I have a question for you. This recently has happened a couple times. So as a maker, you ship your wallets. I'm sure other makers that'll listen to this. What do you do when you ship a wallet, especially in a timely manner, and it gets lost? How do you handle it?
I've had this happen. Well, there's two different stories I want to share with this. So I've had this happen, and it's happened a handful of times. Two of the times, of the like maybe three or four times that a package has gotten lost, it was to the same person. So I work with a producer in LA, and when she's done wrapping or getting close to wrapping a movie or a TV show, she orders the TV show logo on a bunch of key fobs, and that's her like gift to the cast members. And two times in a row, it got lost, and they're driving distance from my house. Like, I'm, you know, LA is an hour and a half away, and both times it got lost. I replaced the order, meaning I spent the day or two to make the order, all of the material cost, had to buy rivets and, you know, actual keychains, all of these things. And when I shipped out the second order, the day after I shipped out the order, the first order arrived. And it's infuriating. But I have a motto, like, I got to make things right. I look at it the same way as when I managed, I don't know, a pizza shop, or I managed a group of people below me. You have to resolve the issue. It doesn't matter what that cost is. It makes no difference, because if you get a bad review or a bad thing, that's gonna dwarf, you know, 10 great things. So I try to make things right with those, especially when it's somebody that's consistently ordering from me.
Yeah.
That's super frustrating. But international orders are even harder, because if you don't fill out that paperwork right, the person has to pay duty. They have to, like, you know what I mean? Like, it goes through immigration and all of that stuff, and they have to pay money to get it. And like, I didn't know this at the beginning. And I had somebody on the previous podcast. And when I did the previous podcast, I would put together like a whole like thank you package for the people that were on it. And she lived in Canada, and I sent it to her, which cost me like $40 on top of the like work I did on it. Right.
Yeah.
And it arrived up there, and I don't know if she even listens to the podcast anymore. Things didn't end well, but this was the first red flag. And she got mad at me for sending her something. And she was like, you know, you need to do this, this is, and the whole tone was off. Like,
yeah.
It wasn't like a learning experience for me. It was just like being put down and belittled. So I was like, well, I'm not sending anything anymore. Like, if this is the reaction of spending my material and my time to give a thank you to a peer for, taking time out of their day to be on the podcast, like, fuck it, like, not doing it anymore.
Yeah. Well, I, cause I had a couple, I mean, USPS sometimes just like a couple times though, a couple times I actually just have responded with, if you just wait a few days and then we'll revisit it. Cause a lot of times it just shows up. Cause I don't know if they just mark it as delivered and then they don't feel like taking it up or whatever, but, a couple times I've had like to decide, like, how do I handle this? And I still like struggle. Like a lot of times I give either a really heavy discount or like I made a mistake and I actually shipped the wrong color wallet. So I just shipped them the new one. And I was like, just keep that one or gift it or whatever. Cause it's like, it was my mistake. But sometimes I feel like it is hard to just like trust that they didn't get it, even though it says it was delivered, and then send another one. Because
I agree. I have, see, that's not what the problem is in the situations that I've had.
Oh,
the
problem see, that like, I have, it was delivered this twice. People said that they didn't get it, and I was like, but it, I mean, it says it was delivered.
Don't and, that doesn't UPS like take a photo of it when it's on the doorstep?
The USPS doesn't.
I'll tell you, I'll answer that question. If that was the scenario that I would be in, I would take a screenshot of it and say it was delivered. I'll reach out to UPS. You reach out to UPS, give them the tracking number, but I have to go off of what this says. In my situation, and that's, I would just stay firm on that. Like, you're too kind. That's not how it's gone for me. How it's gone for me is I package it. I pay for my my packaging through ShipStation or not Ships, Pirate Ship or whatever. Doesn't matter. They're all the same. I print my label. I put it on the box and I either leave it for my mail lady to pick up. But recently I've been driving it down to the post office, even though I paid for the package, and leaving it there. And it says ready for pickup a week later. I'm like, ready for pickup, like it was picked up. I saw the person. They're either not scanning it. Then the person, because I send the tracking number to them, is like, hey, did you send this out? Like, did you just print the sticker? Like, what's going on? They get frustrated. And then I'm like quick to be like, I'll make it right. Like, just give it a few days. If it doesn't show up, we'll, like you said, revisit it. But that's different. I know that it's shipped out. It doesn't say that it was delivered. It goes from ready to pick up to delivered in one step.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've definitely had some international stuff, but that I just tell the customers, like, it's going to take forever. I mean, it's just the way it is. Unless you're
paying, our postal like, service is completely wrecked, and it has been for 2 or 3 years now, and it's frustrating.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's stressful because, I mean, you put all the time into making it, and then it's like, I'm not trying to rip anyone off. Like, I mean, I wouldn't be charging right. $50 a wallet if you're like, come on.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. I think about gotcha. That all the time. Even for me too, like I always try to be super transparent because I'm making custom projects and I don't have an inventory. I take 100% of the money up front and I'm very like clear with them. I'm like, hey, even if I take 50% of this and you don't give me the 50% before I ship it out, I can't sell this stuff. It's a portrait of your grandma. Who's going to buy a portrait of your grandma besides you? And then I'm out of money. And I've never had pushback from anyone. It's just important for me to tell people, like, I'm really consistent with telling people, like, hey, your project got pushed back a week before I can start it. Or, hey, good news. I always, and I recommend this to anyone. If you have a wait time or you're getting a longer queue or however you phrase it, always say that it's longer than it is. Always deliver sooner than expected because people, if you say, oh, I'll get started on that in a month. There was a time that I had a 6 or 7 month waiting list. And I told people that, and if I could deliver in 5, dude, you're like a king to these people.
Well, I put on my website just in general, like 1 to 2 weeks, just because I never know if I get like more orders than I can handle. But most of the time I'm making and shipping within a few days, within the week, most of the time. I mean, unless I'm getting like multiple bags and stuff because those take the day. Yeah, but overall, it's I try to get it out quicker. I don't know. I like getting it out and knowing it's done and handled.
Yeah. It's a sense of accomplishment. It's like the big version of making your bed in the morning, right?
Exactly.
You start your day off by making the bed.
Orders are done.
That's your first dopamine. That's your first dopamine hit of the day, and you get your accomplishment thing going. I got a question for you real quick, Seth, is if you're making, like, you do more of the like production style stuff, right? That's safe to say. So if you get some awesome weather that you absolutely love, you put it up, it's on your website, and you don't have access to that leather going forward, or you ran out and they're back ordered for a month or two. I know that there was a big problem with that a couple months ago with Wicked and Craig, like they were, it's impossible to get. How do you combat that if you get an order in for, say, a particular color of leather that you use consistently, it's on your website, then you get three or four of those wallets ordered, you don't have it, you can't get it, or you just haven't taken it off of your website. How do you navigate that kind of a situation?
So luckily I haven't. So the way I do it is with, like, say my standard leathers, I put my like the number that I will sell in my website, and I always put less than I think I have. So that way, like, if it says out of stock, I likely still have that leather. And then I just go and I'll punch out whatever I need with the dyes or certain, like, I'm actually switching up leathers a little bit now. Those will eventually be discontinued, but I could run into that where I'm like, oh crap, I sold the wallet and I don't have that leather. I think the biggest thing, kind of like with the shipping stuff, is just like being straight up with them and honest. And there's enough, I feel like there are enough leathers that you could buy small amounts to, like, similar, or colors at least. You could at least order in a different color. Like, it, say you wanted, like, the olive harness or any harness leather, Wicked and Craig is probably, I haven't looked in a while because I kind of stopped using it for that reason. It's like, good luck getting it. But there are other olive leathers out there, or medium browns or whatever you want that are close. And then you can offer that. And obviously you might have to discount it a little bit because it's not what they want. But most people that I've come across are like, oh, it's olive. Okay.
Do you find that more people are choosy about the color or the brand and company or whatever of leather? Because the average person doesn't really know Wicked and Craig, all of the different Horween, brands of Horween. Yeah, they don't know what that is. So they're more interested in the color, right?
Yes, but I know, and you know.
Yeah, I do. But, yeah, of course.
But I think it matters as a maker if you're trying to sell a nicer, these wallets and stuff or belts. Because like the certain belt leather, I'm selling a Legacy belt, which is like my higher end belt. But to me, I don't wear another belt. That leather is like the best belt leather I've had. It's insane. Like, to me, and it's like, once people get it too, I've had emails, reviews, like, this belt leather is, there's a reason that you have to charge what you do. They're like, this is so nice. And like, they won't care about what the tannery's name is, but once you, I think it is important though in the quality of the material.
Right. And there's certain people that include the name, right, as part of their marketing. So if that's Horween or Wicked and Craig, that's part of their marketing. And if you give them something different besides those brands, you're a pile of shit. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a good move to do.
No,
like,
you are lying.
and if you don't advertise that you use a particular brand of material and you're able to find the same weight, the same quality, and the same color, That to me is completely different. If you feel confident and you're not ripping this person off because you're paying 40% less for a type of leather, that usually goes in hand in hand with 40% less quality of product too.
But I also think like there's a certain leathers that are considered seconds that I don't think are seconds. Like they have a scar or something that you're not going to use anyway. So you get, that's sweet. Like I actually got some Horween English tan and it was seconds, but it's quality. I mean, it's still great.
You have to cut out like a 6-inch part or something. Right. You just go around it.
Right. And that's the way, as like a small business, I've been able to save, because I can't always buy the most expensive. Or you can try different leathers that way. But
well, that part is something that I wanted to ask you a little bit more, because you mentioned earlier about how you'll do drops, and I've tried to do that a little bit. I do it a little bit different. I do like auctions, mm-hmm. Where I'll do something that I want to do, right? Like I did a flash sheet and I'll be like open auction. Anyone interested, DM me. And then I put them in a private group and let them just bid war it out over the process of making it. Once I get like the basic image of it, then I'll put it out there, like open betting. And then throughout the process of making it, I'll take a photo, put it into the group, as well as through my stories to allow people to come in and be like, the current bidding's at $300. And then it just keeps going up and up and up. And that's worked pretty well for me. And it only works well when I'm doing progress photos of it. And I can be like, oh, this is the price. If it's just an item that I make completely and say starting bid at $100 and there's no progression, it loses steam. How do you do your version of that? Or how do you do drops that have been successful for you? Because I think that a lot of people could get a lot of value out of what you're about to say.
So for me, if there's, say, a certain leather I want to try, or I eventually think I want to offer as like a standard line of leather that, or my wallet's in that leather, I will order a small amount of it and basically photograph it, put it on the website, and then it's in a limited amount. Once I sell out of that, depending on how it sells, will also depend, like, basically help me decide if it's something I want sticking around. So I feel like there's a smaller number, and I have quite a few customers that like trying different leathers, like my wallets, but collect different colors. And so for them, it offers a different way to like get the same wallet that they know they like, but they want to try it in a different color or whatever.
Right.
It's pretty cool for me because then I get to try a different leather. But I definitely, if I'm going to do that, I make sure it's not like a full side. I either buy like half a shoulder or something. Yeah. Or a panel and then it also like, I can then photograph something different and put it on my social media. It's like breaks up the standard, this is the wallet I sell kind of pictures. Or belt or something. So
that's something that I think about often too, is if you have a catalog of stuff and it's pretty consistent, right? You want to keep a pretty consistent catalog. How much content can you get out of one wallet? You know what I mean? Without recycling it to the point where people are like, dude, I just saw this a month ago. It's so repetitive for me because we do the same craft, but we do it so much different. I can't sell anything that isn't carved and painted. I try to do simple things to lower my price points. There's so many different things that I like because I like the simplistic, like EDC type of stuff. You know what I mean? Like I love that kind of stuff, but I can't sell it to save my life. Like maybe I could at a show, but people have come to expect something out of me. It's so hard. And I photograph, you know, usually like as soon as I'm done tooling something, then I'll do a big reveal of it completely finished. I get two pieces of content out of it aside from if I make a video from it, and that's it.
Well, I definitely like I do like your standard. I'm sure you've seen like the everyday carry type pages and stuff. Like I collect pocket knives and stuff. So like I try to post like kind of what I'm carrying too. And a lot of the like limited type run stuff I do, I will carry it too, just to see what it looks like. And also because I like it and I want to keep it. I have too many. But I think that's one reason I do shell Cordovan only a couple times a year, because first of all, it's so expensive. I don't make a lot of money off of that. Like that's not where my,
it's impossible to make money off of that because it's so expensive. And people that I feel like if I wasn't a leathersmith, I would have no idea about that kind of leather. And then if someone's asking me, you know, $200-$300 for a card, whatever, I don't know, I've never used it. Like, but you break down the math of what you have to charge in order to at least clear yourself of the cost of buying the material, let alone your time. Like, I don't know who buys that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there are some makers that use it all the time. And I'm like, man, that must be pretty sweet. But I don't know. That's a different clientele that I, there are a lot of guys that buy my wallets in that, like say a shell Cordovan, but that couldn't be the sole thing I sell. Like, it's just not realistic for me. But it is really fun getting it in and using it. And I try to keep though that stuff will be like limited because it's like, I'm only buying two or three shells and that's a lot of money. And that's all I'm going to have for a while. Cause.
And what does one of those cost?
Oh, a couple $100 for
$200-$300.
Yeah. Yeah. For about two. Yeah. It's about $100 a square foot. Yeah, it's crazy.
I want to buy it just because I'm a selfish asshole and I want to make myself something from it because.
So call up Tannery Row. They sell, it's called a chip. And it's their smallest size and it will have the stamps, but it's small, but it's much cheaper and you can try it. It's the way to go. That's what I started. I tried. And then obviously my wallets take up a lot of space. So I had to buy the larger, extra large shells. And it's intimidating to use at first because it's like, man, I better not mess this up. I mean.
I feel that way with some of the leather that companies sell me out to do like collaborative projects with.
Oh,
like,
I bet.
Holy crap. Like. Some of the stuff, like it's such a dramatic difference. And I like really stiff leather. And the stuff is like, it's just so crispy. You're like, oh my God, this is, it's just gorgeous. And I it's hard because I can't increase my prices to bring this in. I'm already at the top. Like I'm getting to the point where I'm going to start running some sales where I never did that. Like I was totally on this like Kanye West kind of mindset, like nothing's going on sale. Then I'm like, oh, that's great. I'm going to go out of business then. Yeah. Like I got to start making some moves because my highest cost wallet is $900. Wow. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like for a woman's wallet that has a portrait on it, that's where it is. You know what I mean? And like, that's as luxury as you can get. Like there's a small market of people willing to spend that kind of money on something.
Well, I make a bag that I sell. It's $750 and I haven't sold many, but it's over 20 hours. And it's like, I honestly, if you break down that number and then the cost for all the leather, I'm not making that much. So
it's probably good. You're making far more as a firefighter.
Yeah. It's probably good. I don't sell a ton of them because but I mean just time wise it'd be insane because I hand sew all the gussets on it because I just think it's stronger for that. But the back to your question regarding like tannery and stuff, I love talking about it. I love telling people the history behind some of the tanneries and sending them to their Instagrams or pages. And I think because then it goes back to like where this stuff came from then it comes to me in my little shop, and then it goes to you. There's no massive, just factory of just tons of people running it through machines. It's like, it's
you're buying a roll or right. two at a time.
Yeah, it's small. It's small, old school owned tanneries that then get into my little shop, and then you get to own it, and it'll last you a long time. And
yeah. Do you find that you're, I always tell people, and I truly believe this, that their product will last longer than they do. Like,
oh yeah,
absolutely.
If you take care of it, definitely.
Yeah, totally. Do you find that your clients have an interest in why leather is so expensive, or why there's different tanneries and the quality of work? Because I've never ran across anybody that was interested in it. Even friends or family that come over to look at what I'm doing, no one they just want to see the product that I made. They don't care about the tannery at all. It's only my peers and like leather nerds that yeah. enjoy it.
So I do have a couple guys that I've actually become friends with, and they buy my wallets. But I've also had conversations with, especially this particular guy. He's really into bourbon. He's really into, old school knives. Like, he enjoys the history behind things. And so when I get like a new leather, I'll be like, oh, a tannery. And like, he'll want me to like send him the links to that. And that to me is pretty sweet, but it is rare. But I think that where it does matter is we know the history behind and the quality behind some of these tanneries and what they send us. But I also, once someone gets that piece, they go, oh yeah, my $10 Amazon wallet, this is far superior to that. Like,
that's the difference. 100% of the people that see the leather that we work with or come into my shop and see the products, that's 100% of their reaction. Like, holy crap. Like, this is so much different than what I'm buying as a leather product from JCPenney's or Macy's or even Saks or something like that. Like, whether it's natural or dyed or whatever, but vegetable tan is so much different than like upholstery leathers or, you know, any of that kind of stuff. Chrome tan. Like, I haven't used chrome tan since the first month that I got into leathercraft. Like,
oh, see, there is some chrome tan that I actually really like. I mean, most of Horween has some form of chrome tan to it. I can totally get behind the chemical. You don't necessarily want to use that, like, because of the different processes of tanning. But I actually have a chrome tan that I use. It burnishes as good as a veg tan, which is crazy, because normally it doesn't. It's harder to do that.
I suppose the reason why I've never really gotten into any chrome tans is as soon as I started like carving and tooling.
Oh yeah,
you can't really carve and tool that. And as we're talking, like, me working with real veg tan products, it's so much different than what I thought leather was and what we're used to is leather. That, like, when you actually work with anything like 4 to 5 ounces or thicker when it comes to veg tan, like, it's insane. It's totally yeah. different than what you're expecting. Like,
right.
And that's always the reaction from people, like from my mother-in-law to my, you know, my brother-in-law, the aunts, the uncles, the cousins, like everything. They're like, whoa, this is like, even a key fob, when you make a really good key fob, it reminds you of like a luxury car company. You know what I mean? Like, you have that feel, and you know it's going to last longer than the car is. That's for sure.
Yeah, I definitely can see, like, obviously I kind of had mentioned off the air here when we were talking, I am moving a little bit more towards some of the Italian veg tan, just because it's just a little bit more consistent for me, for what I need. And the waste is, like, when on these double shoulders, there's like no waste. So you can use the entire thing. There's no belly. There's no, because I hate throwing away leather. And it pains me when you have to like trim off the parts that are just the wrinkled and you can't use it. But yeah, I don't know. I love exploring all of it, but most of the customers don't really care where it's from as long as it's good quality.
that goes back to what we were talking about, though. I feel like they're buying the person in the story, because if you use really high quality Italian leather, which I feel like is between the high end standard stuff that we have access to and the like Cordovan that we could use, like it's right in that middle point, very, very high end. People are in awe, especially when nothing is made from it yet, and they just see it and feel it, and like it gives me goosebumps, no joke, like how nice this stuff is, because we're nerds for it. But at the same time, like if you use the same products, they're not like the average person probably won't know the difference. It's like somebody that drinks whiskey to get drunk compared to like a whiskey enthusiast, you know what I mean? Like it's still a utility to a lot of people.
Well, and I like whiskey, but I can't tell you the difference between a $300 bottle versus a $50. I don't know.
Right. But if that was your job, you would certainly be able to.
That's true. And you better be able to.
Right. And that's our responsibility, right, to do that. Hey, Seth, so what is, you know, you were on the Monday Motivation podcast, and that was about a year ago. And I always ask every guest, hey, would you be interested in coming back in, you know, 6 months to a year ago? Here we are. What do you think, two-part question, what do you think has changed in the time that we spoke last on air? And what are your goals and your hopes for next year?
So I would say that as far as change, I'm kind of like settled into my groove, I guess. Not to be complacent, but I've just kind of like, I'm very comfortable in what I'm making. I feel like my sales are relatively steady. They kind of ebb and flow like anything, but I know what I have my shop kind of built. That was a big thing. A proper bigger space. And then for next year, there's a few designs and things I either want to like revisit and tweak, but just kind of expand my skill level and some of the things I'm making and make them better than they currently are, or I have ideas that I want to work on. But I'm very content and happy where my business is right now. It's allowed some freedom, like for financially for my family, because it isn't my full-time job, but I'm able to like still create a decent wage for my family that we can do additional
vacation, house additions, right, whatever, right, new right. shoes.
Yeah, like we just had to pay for a roof. I mean, a lot of the money I made went into a roof. I mean, so I think like I'd like to do more. I said this last year and I did a few. I don't know how many I'm going to do, but I'd like to get out there and like let people like be able to talk to like locals in Cleveland and stuff, do some more shows. Because a lot of people have no idea my business exists here. But there it's tough now because I have three kids playing sports. So it's like the weekends are already gone and that's when those are. So eventually I'd like to do some more of that. Like I said, I'm very content in where I'm at as a business. Still some things like website updates I really want to do. But those cost money. So my website, I think as I set it up, I built it. I am happy with it, but it, like anything, it can be better. And that's something I want to do over the next year, 2 years, update that, but just continue to grow skill wise too. I mean, that's just like it. I don't know.
I've seen a huge difference and a huge jump from when we talked last time to now, today, and not in any negative way. It's just that you got better, as we're supposed to, right? Like, as time does, right? We get better at what we do. And I know for me, you're a huge inspiration, somebody that I can reach out to, somebody that reach out to me equally as much as I do you. And we're very involved in each other's lives as much as you can, living on the opposite end of the country. And for me, it's a huge deal because it's different for you. You're a fireman, you go to work, you know, you do something different. But for me, I spend so much time in my studio space alone, and isolation it's a thing. It's a very negative thing. So to be able to have like-minded people to be able to discuss, and for me, something that's super important is to be able to encourage other people while being encouraged myself. And you as a friend have really, really provided that to me. And I just want to thank you on a personal level. You and I just talking, like, it means a lot to me.
Well, I appreciate that. Likewise, I love being able to have conversations like these, because in our little world, it can feel like you're just in your shop doing your thing, and it's people buy your stuff and that's it. But it is really like refreshing to be able to talk like leather tanneries and just like the burnout of just like the conversation we had about like the burnout of, say, being on social media, like the posting and all that. Like it can get wearing when, like, I know it's a kind of like a free thing, but it's like, I don't know, there can feel like pressure in that world. It's like not really a real thing, but it is, because my business is kind of based on engagement and people seeing things. And I know a lot of people probably feel the same way. Like especially with the weird algorithm thing, it's like, man, I put all this time and work into something, and like I have like 8,000, yeah, like people don't see it. It's crazy. But
the burnout is so real. And just like you said, it's refreshing to be able to talk to like-minded people. As much as our wives support us in our endeavors and do, I'll tell you from my personal experience, my wife could give two shits about almost everything that I do. She loves that I'm happy. She's happy that I'm happy, and that's the extent of it. And that's okay. But I think that when you do something that is so challenging every single day, it's nice to talk to somebody else that is also challenging themselves in the exact same way. And it makes you better. And that's what I always preach from this podcast, is like, get involved in a community. If you're new to leather cut, whether you've been doing it a week, whether you've been doing it for a year, reach out to the people that are inspiring you. If they get back to you, they get back to you. I'm telling you from personal experience, I've never reached out to somebody and they didn't get back to me because they were cocky, arrogant assholes. It's because the more of a following people have, the quicker your messages just get lost. And it's not any, I deal with this all of the time, and I open something and I'm like, oh man, I got to go take the food out of the oven or whatever. I'm going to get right back to them. And then I'm like, oh crap, I didn't get back to them. And I got, you know, 8 other messages and I no longer see it. And it doesn't have the notification there anymore. It's like, crap. Like, it's just, it's a bummer in that sense, but it's so important to get into an active community, especially if you do spend a lot of time alone in your shop.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. I love talking about those types of things.
I appreciate you talking with us today, taking time out of your busy schedule. I hope you'll check in with us again. Thank you for being an awesome co-host, and I appreciate you. And do you have any advice you'd like to give to any new leathersmiths about what it is that we do?
It's hard to say. Like I said earlier, just keep making it, sticking with it, because eventually it'll get better. I mean, I think you see pictures on social media, you think, oh, I can do that immediately, and it takes time. So just keep working at it.
Take, to go along with that theme, take a lot of photos, even at the beginning when you're not happy with it.
Yeah.
Because
scroll
in a year
back through mine, you should say. Yeah, it's so funny.
It's important to have those kinds of things. And it's really important because I look back at the first things that I ever made, and it's one of my favorite things ever is to like swap first photos with other leathersmiths, be like, dude, look at how garbage I was a year ago, 2 years ago. And it's like, it's really encouraging because you see the progress, and the progress is what keeps you inspired and happy to keep on making. Take lots and lots of photos. And this I'm speaking to myself, to you, to everyone, is don't be scared to post something. Just post it and run. If it doesn't get the engagement that you're hoping, maybe the next one will, whatever. No one is looking at you and like, dude, you only got X amount of likes on this. What a loser. That doesn't happen ever.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. Just, it's important to document your journey. And I think that's why that Instagram especially is cool, because it's, you get to see the progress you make. So
100%. All right, guys. Well, until next time, thank you for tuning in to the Wake and Make podcast. If you're enjoying this podcast, please follow, subscribe, whatever it is on the podcasting thing that you're using. Share it with a couple friends, rate and review. I just want to get this out to more makers in hopes of encouraging them and inspiring them, and hopefully having them on as guests as well soon. So I appreciate all of the listeners. I appreciate you, Seth. Thank you so much for coming on. And until next week, we'll see ya.
Way back a year ago.